He founded and served as senior partner of the law firm Opperman and Paquin and was named a top litigator by Minnesota Lawyer in 1991 and the National Law Journal in 1992. He has served on President Clinton's National Information Infrastructure Advisory Council. Currently, he serves on a number of corporate and community boards, including the Itasca Project, the Metropolitan Economic Development Association, and is a past president of the Minnesota High Technology Association. And currently, he is also a board member and chair of the audit committee of a $9 billion company named Thompson out of New York. Mr. Opperman earned a Juris Doctorate right here at the University of Minnesota Law School. Please welcome Mr. Vance Opperman.
And I have your driver's license
here. Ah, my driver's license. I'll probably use that. Well, thank you very much. This is an august panel. We can all agree that Gopal Khanna is the greatest information officer the state's ever had in our history. Professor Micklin, I wrote down a copy of several of your books. The 8 Imperatives for Leaders in a Network World, Leadership for a Cross-Boundary World. I understand that as an effort to boost sales, your next book is going to be entitled Harry Potter and the IT Sorcerer. Good luck with that. Yeah, I know. I'll think of that. Minority Leader Seifert, you're quoted in the paper as saying that Democrats spend like drunken sailors. And I think that's libelous, at least to drunken sailors. And it's also wrong. People that sign Glenn Mason to 5-year contracts, those are drunken sailors. I don't mind, and I'm not terribly embarrassed by losing to Texas Tech, 31 points in a bowl game no one ever heard of. But I am embarrassed if we lose to Texas Technology. And I would like to begin by thanking all of you on behalf of my family. I'm a product of public education in this state. Went to grade school here, went to junior high school here, went to high school, graduated from Alexander Ramsey High School, now called Roseville High. I'd rather be named, by the way, after a governor as opposed to a suburb. Got my undergraduate degree here, my law degree here. I'm a product of that, and when I chaired along with Rondi Erickson, the Citizens Commission on Higher Ed, we heard a number of statistics, but the one that stands out in my mind is that 65% of the people that get degrees from higher education institutions in the state of Minnesota stay in the state of Minnesota, pay taxes in the state of Minnesota, and build jobs in the state of Minnesota. Nothing wrong with that picture. And in fact, if I can share with you briefly one of my experiences at West Publishing Company, we went online more than 31 years ago. And every year along that 31 years, every year, number of employees went up. Benefits went up. Salaries went up. Oh, sure, some of the jobs changed. You're not wiping down old oily printing presses with oily rags anymore. Retraining was the key to that, and no layoffs. That's the message of high technology in a nutshell, and I've seen it. And there are two lessons I took away from that. First, you need to have a champion to make high tech work. And second of all, you got to do it. And I want to give you 4 examples of things I think you got to do. They're a small board. They're not going to cost a lot of money. And then I'm going to tell you why you ought to do them. First, in transportation. As you all know, gas prices are getting higher. In fact, gas prices have gotten so high. Just the other day, I saw Judy Dutcher and Mike Hatch carpooling, if you can imagine that. You ought to have a web page. Won't be hard to do. You ought to indicate if you're serious about E85. I know nobody knows what that is. You're serious about ethanol, you're serious about alternative fuels, but there are only 385 gas stations in the state. Where are they? I don't know where they are, but you could put it on a website. Now, there is a U.S. Department of Education transportation that does some of that, doesn't give the prices. Why don't you have a website that gives the prices of all the different gas stations and all the alternative fuels in Minnesota and then put it as a URL on the back of people's driver's licenses? It doesn't cost you anything. Some people are going to look at that and they're going to say, huh, gee whiz. Easy to do. Small bore. Do it. Healthcare. Oh, I know some of you want to put a special button on the healthcare website. If you slip and fall on the ice, you can push it, and Lori Swanson, the Attorney General, will come over and help you. That's okay. I was a big contributor. But you also should put evaluations of healthcare outcomes. LeapFrog does it. AHA does it. Many different sites do it. Why in the world isn't the biggest payer and guarantor of healthcare, this state, and you got 47,000 employees, why don't you have a website that talks about the outcomes? Who does a better job? What form of medical service is better? You can do that. Every insurance company does it. Oh, they don't like to share it. That's how they put together their networks. You ought to do it. If you believe in consumer-driven healthcare plans, the whole idea behind CDH is that customers will have information. Well, if you don't give them the information, they don't work. Do it. Third, e-democracy. Budget transparency. It's outrageous that citizens who pay all of you and who spend all the money, $30 billion or more, can't go on a website and see how their money's being spent and what it's being spent for. They can't do it at the federal level either. Senators Colburn and Senators Obama have introduced the Transportation or the Transparency Budget Act. You ought to be able to go on and see how the money's being spent. If you did that, by the way, you probably wouldn't read headlines like this. More oversight of nonprofits urged. Put that on a website. What nonprofits are getting what amounts of money? And if you have trouble evaluating that, use the Council of Nonprofits. They do a darn good job and they have a great website. Transparency and budgeting. Second, experiment with wiki legislation. Take some bills, put it on wiki, and have people make suggestions. Now, I know you're going to have lobbyists. They make suggestions anyway. But you're also going to have civics classes, law school classes, citizens, interest groups. Get them involved in the legislative process. If you don't like what you get at the end of the wiki process, don't vote for it. You all have had experience not voting for things. Third, town hall blogs. Why aren't people that are elected to office, why don't they have a time every day when they have a town hall blog? Easy to do. Trying to involve citizens. Fourth, Citizen Day. Why do we have absentee balloting? Why do we have the patchwork of voting that we have? Why can't people vote online anywhere on the same day? You can have a paper trail. You can audit it. And then you don't have, I know people are going to say security problems. Yes, indeed. You all know about the security problems in absentee voting. Have voting on Citizenship Day the same day. Take place anywhere. Doesn't matter if you're in the state. Fifth, post immediately contributors to political campaigns. Now, you know, we have a law, which you all voted for, two of you didn't. We have a law that requires that sexual predators be posted in 48 hours. What's good enough for sexual predators is good enough for Bob Perry of Texas, Bill Cooper of Wayzata, and Vance Opperman of Wayzata. It shouldn't be asking too much that people that contribute to political campaigns have it posted. Now, I'd abolish all the rest of those silly laws and regulations because they're a trap for the unwary. And the money I saved, I'd put into public subsidies for candidates. But nonetheless, at least get the information out. Last of all, education. Online classes. You have Minnesota High School Online, just announced it, great idea. Rather than have the old debates over profile learning, don't throw things. Rather than have that, why don't you require to graduate from high school in this state to take one online class? Easy to do. Plenty of curriculum available. Let the school districts make up whatever class it is. I wouldn't prescribe that. Make your graduation standards for high school the same as necessary to get into Minsku institutions. And why don't you evaluate higher ed institutions in the state? You provide hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a little silly. Those schools are driven more by the U.S. News and World Report survey than by the survey of an entity that pays hundreds of millions of dollars every year. Why not? Why should you? Those are small bore. Let me give you one big bore idea. Here it is, and it's based on our experience, and we all know this. When you can, and to the extent you can, fund education. Fund education at every level. K3 through K, K through 6, K through 12, K through 14, Minsku and the U of M. fund education. There is no other answer. This is a cold state. This is a state that has lousy weather. And go read those immigrant letters back home. Terrible mosquitoes, awful insects. None of us moved here for that. But we live here or we move here, and we do that in part because of the tremendous culture we have, and that is the product of the education tradition we have in this state. Don't shortchange that. The reason you ought to do the small bore things, so the people get faster. That's what the world's about. That's what nanotechnology is about. It's what information science is about. Faster, faster, faster. You know the difference between a hero and an average citizen? 5 minutes. Ted Williams, by the way, said the difference between an athlete and an amateur is half a second. You want people to look at their driver's license. Yeah, that's where I'm going. You want people to take a course online. You want people to know that there's transparency in government. You want people to be faster and more productive. That's why you do those things. And there's one other reason. And let me end at a very good beginning. I want to read to you Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8 of the United States Constitution. Good place to end. That clause says, to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to their authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. The first written constitution in the history of our species that represented and understood intellectual property. And one of only 12 in existence today. No other property in our constitution is mentioned. No other property. Oh, you can't take it away without due process. That's the only property mentioned. Article 1, before everything else. Is it any wonder that a country founded on that principle would today represent 65% of all intellectual property produced in this world? It's not a coincidence. That is why you should do these things. You are the warriors of the 21st century. You can make a difference. Go do it.
I'm supposed to mention that these little cards are being, Kathy, are they being handed out, or they were handed out? They're in your packet. And we would like some questions for the Q&A, so if you could jot some questions down relating to this topic, and we will have the staff collect those as soon as Gopal is done. So if you don't have a card, we'll try to get one to you if you used it earlier. Our final speaker for this session is Gopal Khanna, who was appointed Minnesota's first Chief Information Officer by Governor Pawlenty in the year 2005. In this role, he leads the newly created Office of Enterprise Technology, oversees the statewide information technology planning and budget process, and advises the governor on all state technology issues. Mr. Khanna served in the administration of President George Bush from June 2002 through August 2005 and is credited with leading major reforms in federal government policy. As the Chief Information Officer and Chief Financial Officer of the United States Peace Corps, he was responsible for the successful implementation of a standardized computing platform for the Peace Corps' 72 posts worldwide, design and implementation of an enterprise architectural program that serves as the framework for the agency's systems and modernization strategy, and transformation of financial management systems that resulted in the issuance of the first set of audited financial statements in the agency's 43-year history. Prior to his service in government, Mr. Khanna was in the private sector, where he held several corporate senior leadership positions. He has a broad-based management background, which includes experience in information technology, finance, operations, strategic planning, business development, and consulting. Mr. Khanna earned a Master's of Business Administration degree from the University of Maine. Mr. Gopal Khanna.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Can you hear me all the way back? I just get very contained with the podium business. But anyway, it's been an exciting day. I've learned myself a lot today. We heard speakers talk about the economics, where the global economy was going, where our state's economy is going, where we are compared to other states, about technology, about investments, about various programs, and what the citizens can receive from us and benefit from us. Over the next 12 minutes, what I'm going to talk about and summarize for you is where we are in terms of our delivery mechanism as government. As state of Minnesota, we have, as we look out for the next 15 years, and somebody said earlier this afternoon, I think it was Governor Arne Carlson, said we've got to look long-term picture. And as we look over the next 15 years as state government operations, we have an exciting opportunity, but we have a huge challenge as well. Huge challenge. And it's being caused because of two forces at play at the same time, demand and supply. We in the public sector don't talk in terms of demand and supply. I come from the private sector, and I'm going to try and explain to you what I mean by that. On the demand side of the equation, as we look at our demographics, as we look at our 5.1 million Minnesotans and break them down, 17%, 850,000 are retirees. They are quite content and happy with services being rendered during the hours of 9 to 5. They'll fill out a piece of paper and come back a month later. And they're very happy because that was the structure, the workflow that was designed in the mid-50s. And they were architects of those designs. However, 24% baby boomers, 22% Gen X, 24% Gen Y, and 12% internet kids are so proficient with technology, and they are saying, if I can take care of my banking transaction on a Sunday afternoon, if I can take care of my insurance claims on a Saturday night, and of course my travel plans anytime, 24/7, anywhere in the world, why can't I access my government transactions 24/7? That's our challenge on the demand side of the equation. On the supply side of the equation, if you look at the same demographics, and which was talked about this morning, almost 50% of our government workforce will be retiring in 15 years. Government operations, irrespective of the mission, irrespective of the program, has three components to it, basically. Because we really are like a bank. We really are like an insurance company. We have three components. Number one, the process by which we manage the transaction, the information, the paper flow. Number two, any enabling technology that we use in all the agencies. And number three, the people, the workforce. Now imagine and picture this. If over the next 15 years, 50% of our people who work in government leave, and that's a massive brain drain, and we do nothing about fixing the process or leveraging technology, forget 24/7 service. We will not be able to deliver 9 to 5 service. That's the challenge. But the opportunity is that over the last 50 years, 60 years, technology has evolved. And the private sector and the public sector has effectively used the technology from the good old days of mainframe to mid-range to distributed computing. And today we are at a point in our history, at a tipping point, as Malcolm Gladwell says in his book, 2002 book, Tipping Point, where a little push can do the magic. All the forces are aligned, but with collaborative leadership, with cross-boundary collaboration and transformation, we can indeed reach a point where we can transform how government operations are run effectively and with the transparency and with the availability that our speakers have talked about today. Minnesota is at a unique point in its history where there are compelling forces already in place, and with the leadership, with your leadership, that can indeed be accomplished. Thank you.
Yes, sir. We're going to bring the panelists up at the table, and we're going to collect cards. So if you have a card to bring up, I'm going to ask one question just to pass the time here and be able to start before the cards come up here. I happened to be flipping through the radio stations the other day and ran into NPR. And had heard that St. Cloud, Florida went entirely wireless. And although it was a short-term cost for the city, it ultimately will save the people who otherwise would have had internet access in St. Cloud, Florida, an enormous amount of money. They thought it was going to be something in the line of a couple hundred dollars a year. Once the technology was paid off. Do you think this type of technology would be something Minnesota could do? Anyone who wants to take that one, and then we'll collect cards.
Well, I'd always be concerned that there was not a commercial viable alternative to doing that, but sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. I suggest a somewhat different take on that. One of the holy grails for the last 10 years has been telecommuting. The idea is you save gas, save energy, save all kinds of things with telecommuting. I was going to suggest that, and I ran that by a focus group, i.e. my business editor, and he said, well, it's such a great idea, your employees can do it. But a lot of communities are putting broadband, free broadband access in their mass transit, which increases the amount of mass transit use. Now, that's not going to cost the same, may not make the same impact as doing a whole community, but you could do it pretty quickly, and I think you'd see an increase in the use of public transportation. That might be worth doing.
I think the whole thing is certainly worth looking at very carefully. The one Cleveland example I gave earlier started around Case Western with hotspots of free wireless access. Oakland, Michigan, just this month has started their effort. Philadelphia is pretty famous for theirs. Boston is looking at theirs. Singapore has done a lot of stuff. LaGrange, Georgia is doing stuff. Better take a look at it. 15 years from now, wireless is an essential part of the infrastructure of business globally. How you get there, you want to think about, but you don't want to come too late to that table.
The train has already left, and I think so. We are in a catch-up game. Minnesota is at a position where we're not quite behind, terribly behind other states, but other states are leading us, and we'll have to do some catch-up.
Okay, we'll go with questions, and if you do have other questions you are writing down, hold your card up, and Senator Cascaden or Representative Tingelstad or one of the staff will see you. First question is, what is the role and responsibility of the state in providing equal access, emphasis provided, to government information and services? The Internet is not equally available across geography, socioeconomic class, age, and education.
And also not equally accessible according to disabilities and certain elements like that, too, which is a big issue. To understand it, it is important that it go also in context, which is we are seeing an incredible drop in the prices to get actual access to information through the Internet and other devices. So I think the ultimate equity issue, the rich versus poor issue here, will not so much be access to information from the government, but it'll be access to a lifestyle and cultural personal skills to participate. So it'll be much more driven by education and fundamental depth there than the other. Although it's always interesting to me to look at the survey results from the average people who will say two things that I think are worth noting. Number one, surveys have said if you ask the person in the street, how much of your money does the government waste? The most common answer back is half of it, 50%.
Yeah, but which half?
And which half is a difficult problem. But when you have that amount of skeptical issues around there, that's tough. When you ask them what they want, they often want transparency. They want to be able to see that this government that they think they don't trust because they think it is just so stupid, they want the transparency, and so it's a very legitimate and important issue and can be handled.
Internet access will continue to grow, and in the remote areas, we as a state have played a very significant role as being the anchor tenant in providing connectivity all across the state through our MNET program, which helps in providing information cross-boundary jurisdiction all across for agencies across the entire executive branch. And as more and more private sector investment is made and to reach out to the markets where they were not able to reach out previously, we will see the internet penetration go up and therefore access that much more access availability for the people in rural and the remote areas as well.
I think access is always a problem. Access to libraries, access to quality education have been a problem since time immemorial. I think the internet, access to the net, has a much more democratizing appeal and potential than anything we've seen so far. I'd just raise this caution. Many times the barrier to access is government itself. It's often true that governments charge for information. They try to secret information. They try to make it less accessible. Those are the barriers that ought to be broken down. They can be broken down very cheaply, and they ought to be.
Next question is, fewer than half of us probably know what a wiki process is. How can we keep the legislative process up to date when the legislators themselves aren't?
Well, ask any 10-year-old.
Well,
The time it'll take you to understand what a wiki process is technically is actually fairly irrelevant. The time to understand and participate in one, to see that people can edit the previous edits and maintain a record of who disagreed and why they disagreed and make that easy enough to generate lots of participation in the process and more transparency. If you feel you haven't done this, experiment some. I think that the idea of a legislative process that's a wiki process, that's a worthwhile experimentation. It is low caliber in the sense that it's not going to cost you much to do, but it could be very eye-opening and intriguing.
I mean, is it really true that people who run for office aren't aware of the wiki process? I mean, Senator Coleman changed, by going on the wiki, changed the word anti-war protester to anti-war activist, and there are others. I mean, I just go on the site. I mean, you get the idea. It's not hard to grasp how it works. I mean, the fundamental is kind of tough.
Does anyone want to lay claim to that question? Doesn't look like it. All right. The next question
is... Good question.
Next question is, can state government use the Best Buy program of allowing people high flexibility in where they work and when they work?
I thought that was a very interesting article that came in, was it Newsweek, that talked very extensively about Best Buy's program. And they're an entrepreneurial company. They have tried this innovation on the fringes, as was mentioned earlier this morning, and it has become a grassroots movement, not fully realized yet, but something that's very exciting. Looking at our own demographics for the state of Minnesota employees, at some point in time, we'll have to seriously look at how we can leverage our brain power and the people who are leaving service, because we'll be short of workforce. So we'll have to seriously look into telecommuting policies. We're not quite there compared to Best Buys of the world, but certainly it's a very exciting program worth watching.
And certainly there's so much travel, and it doesn't have to be just work from home. As faculty, I work from home a day and a half a week, and that's pretty much expected, and I have to be there at class time, but I have that kind of freedom, and we're expected to get out every once in a while to where real people are doing real things. So, you know, this is the day that Harvard University considers to be a reasonable day for me to spend on this kind of thing. Don't tell everybody that, but that's true. One element behind it, and Vance referred earlier to the enthusiasm a decade ago behind this, can't we do something environmentally responsible by encouraging more work at home? There are problems with it. And a lot of times those problems, you can't foresee them all at the beginning. But there's also some great benefits with it. We're going to go through a period of time where we're going to have to tolerate more of the quote-unquote problems that emerge as the inevitable cost of learning. Because if it's right on the other end, you've got to go through a learning curve to get there. Now, that doesn't mean that every idea is a good idea, but it does mean that every good idea is going to have some rough spots in getting everybody to understand it and go through it. Let me just say one small thing on that. In running a program that was originally called Strategic Computing and for government, we're trying to look at strategic issues. I have to talk to a number of the technology firms and the leadership there, and I had a very important dinner years ago where they said, look, both government and my corporation are trying to produce value. I have an advantage, though, because I can measure it. Value is when people are willing to pay me for something. So we look at the sales and where they're coming from. And in my firm, everybody knows that 50% of what people consider valuable was not even invented 5 years ago. Everybody knows that 5 years from now, we've got to turn that same trick. We're toast if we haven't fundamentally found new and better ways to offer new and better services. Now, you guys in government are never going to be that extreme, but you're a real drag on the economy if you can't get innovation and an innovation culture and the willingness to put money into those longer-term things that will have rough spots as they go forward, because if you can't keep up, you've lost it. And I thought that was an important observation.
Let me try to crack on that. You got 40,000 employees. I think there are certain agencies that might lend itself a little more to telecommuting than others. I think you ought to try one. Do it. Take a small agency, probably not the Highway Patrol. And
although they're already telecommuting. I mean, yeah, keep them linked in.
Well, they can go after you on the information superhighway. But the I would take one of your agencies. I do that as an experiment. Now, it's going to be expensive, and that was the reason I didn't put in my main remarks and won't be in my column that'll sound a lot like my speech. Because of the expense that you're going to be hit with in terms of broadband, high-speed connectivity, and certain kinds of hardware requirements. So because I believe in PAYGO, let me tell you how you pay for it. Here's how you pay for it, and I'm going to give you a secret that lots of people in the private sector don't want you to know. If you were to adopt as the state in the expenditure of your $15 or $16 billion, and you were to adopt the 3M model or the GE model of online open source bargaining and auction for the purchase of your services and goods, you would be amazed, as 3M was when they started doing that. You save money. You could capture how much you saved. I guarantee you, you'd save enough to try an experiment in one of your agencies on telecommuting.
Gopal, did you want to talk a little about the reverse auction process for a minute or two, since that is something I think Vance was alluding to?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, certainly it's been tried and used at the state for certain items, and there's an opportunity there to do more of it. And as we move more and more towards shared services, we will see that experimentation to continue to grow in the future. That's an exciting opportunity for the future for our state.
Okay. Next question is, in regard to regional and broadband and wireless technology, is it feasible to go the last mile? For example, we have rural farm homes that are 10 miles from the nearest town and isolated.
I guess that's one of those things that has been front and center for the last 5 to 10 years with the telecom companies, and they are struggling with that reality, and they want to reach out to the last mile and fulfill that final commitment. And I think eventually it will happen. How far away it is, I don't know. But surely the way technology is driving and how private sector is moving forward, and as the cost goes down, it'll become more commercially viable for them to do that. I'm not quite sure if state has a role to play in that. State is already an anchor tenant and is working together with the private sector entities in the state to create a mechanism whereby they can use MNET capabilities effectively for our services that are rendered throughout the state. Eventually it will happen. How far out it is, it's difficult to predict.
Well, are there people that don't have satellite movies? I mean, I don't know. I middle Lake Honora not too long ago, and, you know, my email worked fine, BlackBerry worked fine, and 45 miles from nearest human. I think that technology and companies are being driven quickly to solve that problem. I don't see a great need for the state to be involved in that, but there is the tradition of RFD. There is the tradition that we have done quite a bit, and don't think for a moment that printed products, including all those great catalogs you get joyfully, are not subsidized. So there may be a role, absolutely, fourth class is subsidized in the interest of the First Amendment. I favor all that, but there are hidden subsidies, and there may be a role for that. I think it's a limited role. As time goes on, technology gets faster and faster, I think that role gets very small.
And there certainly is a capacity to distribute the work of the state to more geographic locations, some of which may be inherently more economically efficient than downtown Minneapolis or St. Paul.
Next question. This one's somewhat maybe from the philosophy department. Is there any place in which you see information flow needing to slow down? Where is the space for contemplation in all of this?
Excuse me, I have to answer my BlackBerry. I think there will be a lot of need for personal learning about balancing new ways, because we're asking ourselves to work in different patterns, in different ways. I mean, 10 years ago, you didn't see the crackberry phenomenon that you do now. And for some people, it is probably been carried way beyond the point where it's a useful thing. if, you know, legislatures are to be deliberative bodies, most of them will not let the email directly into the actual legislation process to try to create somewhat of a wall, but that varies too as to how that's done. I'm not actually up to date enough on how all legislatures are doing it now. But I do think we have an interest in observing the way we make decisions and the way we make them in a confident fashion, because just being faster on every decision isn't necessarily the right way to go.
I'm reminded of Solzhenitsyn's speech, first speech when he got out of the gulag and came to the United States was at Harvard. We all listened because we expected him to extol the virtues of freedom and democracy, after all, you know, Solzhenitsyn. Instead, what he said was, too much information, too many movies, too many radio, too much television, no chance to write. And I think that's going to be the plaint that you will ever have. My dad told me not too long ago that you'll get to I had a birthday recently, and on that occasion he told me that you get to a certain age when you think the world is going to hell in the handbasket, and that's because you are going to hell in the handbasket. I suspect it's always too fast. I don't think there's anything you can do about it. You can put your fingers in the dikes, you can raise the bar, you can raise the Great Wall of China. Ultimately, the Great Wall gets breached one way or the other, if not by fax machine, then by internet. I think the real question is you have to educate people. They have to know how to interact. They have to know how to weigh data. They have to know how to make judgments. That's education. And so if you shortchange education, then you have too much overload and too much noise.
We'll take one last question. How do we as lawmakers deal with the new blogosphere, where people are saying things that may or may not be true along the internet, etc.? Obviously, this is a fairly new technology that we're all getting up to speed on. But maybe I'll ask, is there any legislator in here blog?
Right.
Okay, we do have some that have started.
Makes you keep thinking, doesn't it? Also, the problem of people who may or may not be telling the truth, I think, has been a problem around for a while.
Well, I'm reminded of a recent campaign, a piece of literature that accused the opponent of being a low-breed, half-wit farmer, half-breed with a mulatto mother. Oh, my God, you say, who said that? They said that about Thomas Jefferson. I think, and go back and read some of the stuff said about Lincoln during the Civil War. I don't know why they call it Civil War, but anyway. I think, great, let 1,000 flowers bloom. What's wrong with people that are literate, kind of at least? What's wrong with people writing and reading and responding? I think that's the essence of the country. I think that's the essence of our success. I think, frankly, that's the real essence of propelling us forward. So I think that's great. Participate in it.
Technology is a double-edged sword. There are a lot of good to be realized and gained, and there are often situations which are unintended consequences and outcomes. And I think the key right now is, if I look at in the context of the state of Minnesota and where we are, we've got to push the technology envelope to leverage the workforce as they leave to manage the brain drain, and that's the challenge. So we have to infuse technology for greater good, for greater productivity. Will there be some unintended consequences? Yes. But we cannot get paralyzed with that either. I think so. We've got to move forward and take action as we discover situations where it call for some policy and or legislative action.
Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, the hour of 3:30 has reached us. Let's thank our panelists for coming in today.
Thank you. I just have a few closing announcements here before we go into social with refreshments, and a couple of highlights of the day here. Well, first of all, I wanted to make note that there is no evaluation in your packet, but we would like to have your comments. So if any comments from the day, especially useful for when we do this program next time around, if you could feel free to email me or catch Sheila Cascade or I in the reception, we'd love to have your feedback. So next we will be going to the reception. That will go until about 5, and the buses will start leaving at 5. But in the meantime, if you want to pull out a couple things from your packet, the first thing is the legislative working groups. There's 8 different groups that have tabletop displays out in the reception area, and they're going to be staffed by our colleagues who are anxious to talk to you and maybe get you involved in their group and give you some more information about what's going on. And then also there's a piece, the Swing Dancing 101 for Legislators. This is the special that we'll have from the Schubert and kind of an example of technology and interactive opportunities, and especially as it may relate to K-12 education and some possibilities you can do with interactive technology. Yeah, that's the large screen at the end there. And then at 4:15, when the Schubert presentation is done, that's when we'll do the drawing. I know there were many of you who completed your cards this morning. We'll have those special prizes announced at that time. And then, let's see here. Okay, so I wanted to just talk about real quick the next steps, professional development, and with the changing dynamics we have in our society here, we think it's really important for legislators to keep on top of this as much as we can. So with that in mind, you'll be seeing more information soon about another professional development opportunity for legislators, and we're going along this line with Our State, Our Future, and it's going to be Program Pizza and Pop, Tuesday evening presentation workshops that will be skills building, leadership skills, collaboration, various things. So watch for that. We're finalizing the details, but it will be some Tuesdays, late January and February. So we'll get some information on that. It will start about 5:30, 6 o'clock, and it'll be in the Capitol Complex area. So that'll be your free pizza for the week. So you might have it more than once, but anyway, watch.